StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.
Welcome to your Style Life Academy teleseminar hosted by StyleLife.com. Your host today will be the man who earned the title of number one pickup artist 3 years running, Neil Strauss, a.k.a. Style, the author of The Game, Penetrating the Secret Society of Pickup Artists. By speaking on this call, you are agreeing to release all rights and grant permission to StyleLife.com to use this recorded conference call in whole or in part for any purpose with no further compensation due. Without any further ado, I would like to introduce your host, Style Life Academy founder and headmaster Neil Strauss, simply known as Style.
Hey guys, thanks for being on this call. I'm really excited about tonight. As you guys may know, I selfishly book these calls, not just for you guys, but for me, because they're a chance to either catch up with old friends who I met in the community or, very, very occasionally, very rarely will I put on someone on the call who I don't know or haven't talked to before. And this is one of those days, and I'll tell you why. As you guys may know, may or may not know, when I first got in the community was basically on Alt Seduction Fast, which was a public news group at the time. And I'm going to lose my voice already, but it's going to be a fun 2 hours. So it was a public news group at the time. And gradually it shifted over to MASF, just a moderated version of Alt Seduction Fast. And there was kind of a beautiful little kind of maybe 2 year period from maybe let's say 2002 to 2004 or something like that, where kind of everybody who's a big name in the seduction community today where it was all posting like obsessively regularly there, every person. And this was like kind of that golden year before when, you know, Ross Jeffries was and David D'Angelo were really the only ones with business, and Mystery sometimes did workshops and that was about it. So, everybody was there. And, eventually, however, the signal-to-noise ratio got really high. We don't experience that thing over here, but after a while, so many newbies were in, like trolls, spammers, things like that. So it almost got you had it just got harder to find good stuff. And I switched over to Mystery's Lounge. And around that time, there were like a couple new posters on MASF who were really interesting to me. And one of them was a gentleman named Brad P. And I kind of like watched his post, and he came in like, you know, I'm going to start off asking him. He came in pretty strong, like pretty soon, as soon as he got in, he was already posting pretty spectacular field reports. And they were amazing field reports. And it was clear that head of the community had already done some work himself and figured some of this stuff out. So I kind of watched him with interest, but we never connected. He never became a part of Mystery's Lounge. And so we never really got to talk. So this is your chance to ask him some questions, my chance to ask him some questions. And obviously since then, he's got many, many, many other accomplishments. He just moved out to LA. He's run his own business. He's put out some good books, great books. And we'll talk about those as the call goes on and find out from the man himself. So, Brad P., thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Cool, man. So let me just start off by asking, man, you know, I just saw you kind of, yeah, you know what? Let's start at the beginning. So let's back it up a little bit. So what we're going to do is start off just talking about a little bit about your sort of dating background, your experiences with women. So the first sort of post-pubescent years of your life, how did you deal with women? Were you okay? Were you horrible? Were you scared? What was your background?
I was actually pretty horrible.
Uh-huh.
And I shouldn't have been horrible, and that's kind of what was always upsetting to me. When I was a teenager in school, I was not a very social guy. I was definitely on the shy side and introverted. And, I wanted to, you know, get successful with the girls, obviously, but not having social skills, my way of attacking it was to sort of kind of become this overachiever guy. So, you know, I got really good grades. I played sports. I was the captain of the basketball team, and I was just doing well at everything, and I thought that by doing that, you know, I would become successful with women. And it didn't end up working because, you know, women would kind of notice that and and some of them would even get interested in me occasionally, but without having the social skills to talk to them, and I just wasn't able to capitalize it. So I felt like
despite being the captain of the basketball team, you still weren't having any luck.
Yeah, I mean, I did not date one single girl in my high school.
That makes me feel better. Go ahead.
I mean, I wasn't going to the basketball parties. I was more like a basketball nerd, I would say. I was like in the gym 24/7, didn't talk to anybody except my coaches, you know, because I kind of had to. I wasn't even a naturally athletically gifted guy. I was just working harder than all the other players, and that's how I became successful in athletics. I mean, I was a really, you know, awkward kind of guy, but I just kind of found a way to teach myself to be coordinated by playing 24/7, which helped me a lot later because I kind of applied that same work ethic to meeting women, you know, years later. But at the time, it was very frustrating to just not have any women in your life and just to be, you know, feeling really lonely.
Right.
And I went to college at a school that was 70% women.
Where'd you go?
I went to Adelphi.
Okay, cool. I did too. I tried that trick as well. It didn't work for me, but how did it work?
I mean, it definitely helped a little bit, you know. I was able to get a girlfriend there, and, you know, women were noticing me more just because they had no choice. But then once I got out of Adelphi, I moved to New York City. I was living in Queens, New York. And the game just got 10 times harder all at once I got out of school.
Right.
So I kind of found myself in a position where I had no clue how to meet women. I had a degree, I had a job, but New York women just really have a strong frame and they're not the easiest to approach. And, you know, I was just kind of out of luck for a while there, you know.
Right. And then what happened or what did you start doing?
Well, I was kind of just trying to really leverage my peer groups and people I knew. And, you know, I could get a girlfriend occasionally. It was definitely a struggle, but I could, I mean, I was putting my mind to it and really focusing on it. So I could get a girlfriend once in a while. But a couple of years later, I think it was about when I was in New York, I had a few different jobs. I worked with the mentally handicapped. I worked with, I was a social worker for a while with at-risk urban teens. And so it just really helped me develop my social skill doing these things. So I mean, about 5 years into that, you know, I actually broke up with a girl who was really, you know, that I was really into, and, you know, I was really down about it, and something just kind of snapped, and I said to myself, you know, I've always been good at everything, but I don't know how to be good at this. I don't know how to be good with women. It's just been like a lucky break here and there for, like, you know, the last 10 years of my life, you know?
Right.
So at that point I decided to go out 7 days a week and try to meet women, and just approach, you know, every day. And at the time I actually had no awareness of the seduction community. I didn't actually find out about it until 2 years later, which is another interesting story that I'll get into, but I was just going out by trial and error and trying to figure out how to get women interested and trying everything. And I was trying to pick up stuff from my friends. I had a few friends who were pretty good with women, so I picked up a lot of things from them. But yeah, it was definitely a long road.
What did you pick up from them? Because I remember in my frustrating AFC days, I would ask women for advice, and I would get the worst advice ever, which I would, of course, then go execute because I didn't understand it and have a, you know, and it was just horrible. Because yeah, I remember women would say, I want to be treated like, you know, no guy treats me like a gentleman. I want them to pick me up and take me on a real date. And I remember my next date, I don't remember, I think it was a blind date or something. Like, I picked her up. I brought her, like, a present and shit. Like, you know, I took her on a real date, and it was just a fucking disaster. At the end, we were just so bored of each other. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I definitely had some moments like that. You know how I kind of went about it? I mean, it wasn't so much me asking people for advice. There was some of that going on. I mean, I have some friends who are just incredible naturals. And there was four or five of them in particular that I learned from over the year. One guy was a club promoter. Another guy was an actor. I mean, these guys were serious, serious naturals. So I didn't kind of try to, like, you know, say, hey, man, come help me out and, you know, tell me what you do. Because, you know, if you come to these kinds of guys with your hand out, I don't think they really want to help you that much, even if you're friends with them, you know. And I think that's part of the reason why some people get bad advice, because there's just no true intention of helping. So what I would do is I was kind of like, hey, I'm going out to meet girls today. Do you want to come? And we would just go together. And I was out by myself more often than not, but occasionally one of these guys would come with me and they would just watch what I was doing and they would say, you know, all right, check this out, try this. And we would just try different things. And there were some things that didn't work, but there was a lot of things that did. And just by going every day, you have a chance to sort through what's the good advice, what's the bad advice, what's working, what's not. I mean, one of the first guys I learned from, he routinely did 20 approaches a day just as part of his normal life. He didn't think it was anything unusual or anything that – he didn't have to make it a point. Just him being his normal self meant approaching 20 women every day.
Right.
So he was one of my role models, and it made me feel like it was normal for me to be approaching a ton of women every day. And that was really helpful for me in the beginning, because the first, I don't know, month or maybe even 2 months was just intensely frightening, just scary as all hell for me to be doing these approaches. And keep in mind, I have no openers, no books, flying by the seat of my pants, you know.
Right. And then what was the next step or what was that, you know, when did you start to learn?
Well, I'd say after the first month, a lot of the fear started to go away. And that's really the gateway for getting good at this, because once your fears start to go away, then you can show a little bit of your true personality and you can show who you are a little bit. So I started to be able to, like, get phone numbers, and I would have the same opening line that I would use every time. I mean, even without the seduction community, I was sort of developing what we would call a routine stack now, you know? So I was starting to have good material. I was using the same things all the time. I was getting numbers. I couldn't get any of the girls to pick up the phone, but I could get numbers, which I felt, you know, I felt like I was making progress. Then I got to the point where they would pick up the phone, but they wouldn't come meet me. You know, and a month after that, they would show up to dates, but I wasn't getting laid. I was doing kind of those disaster dinner dates, kind of like you talked about.
Right.
But after a while, you know, I'd say every month there would be a new piece of it that came together for me, until by the end of about 8 months of approaching 7 days in a row, I had gotten really good at it. I mean, I had a really intense work ethic. I was angry about all the years I spent missing out, and I think some of that anger, like, fueled my will to go out every day. I was also having a great time doing it. By the end of 8 months, I mean, I could approach any girl. I could get them laughing. I could get their number. I wasn't getting laid that much, but I was getting laid, like, here and there.
Right, just by kind of working the odds and having enough women calling you and stuff.
Yeah, and I had some killer routines at that time. I mean, going out 7 days a week, you will come up with some fantastic stuff, no matter who you are, you know. So, you know, I mean, if you would have just seen me approach that time, I mean, I had gotten laid, I don't know, maybe 5 times at that point with new girls since I started learning. But if you were to just watch my approach skills, cold approaching, and to an average guy off the street, it was very impressive. So actually right around that time, I actually lost my job, and my friends had been saying, this is amazing how you go up to these girls in bars, you know, you should show people how to do it. And, you know, being that my background was I had a psychology degree, and a philosophy degree from college. And while I was in college, I had met some motivational speakers. And I had been reading self-help literature for years. So I started an informal self-help group for men who weren't succeeding with women. And what we used to do is there was a pizza shop in Manhattan where they weren't really using their upstairs dining room. So I said to the guy that owned it, hey, let me use your upstairs dining room. Let me shut it down and have my people in. I'll buy 2 pizzas. I'll buy, like, some beers from you, and we'll call it even. And he said, sure, you know, he wasn't using it. So guys would come in, they would drink some beers and eat some pizza, And I would kind of talk off the top of my head about how to approach women and get numbers and things like that. And I did that for about 3 months.
And now, was this before you found MASF or after?
This was long before.
It was long before you found the community. Very cool. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I had a teaching background because I had been a social worker and all this. So my teaching skill was already very good. My approaching skill was already very good. And I had a lot of empathy for my students because I had been such a dork and these guys were just coming in as a dork.
What made you want to go teach it rather than learn it more, you know, versus teaching it at that point?
Well, I mean, I was unemployed.
Right.
And I knew I had a lot to offer. I had been helping, you know, kids and mentally disabled people for years, and I knew I could help people. But actually 3 months in, you know, at that point, I think I was back in New York, so I wasn't traveling. So I had a rotation of, I think, four girls that I was, you know, dating on the regular. So it wasn't like I didn't know what I was doing, you know.
I was saying less than what made you try to teach it before you had, you know, some certain degree of skill, more than like actually the thought of teaching it, because I'm sure, you know, there are probably things that I'm good at, you know, surfing or something that I'd still teach my friends, like, and they get hooked that even if I was broke, I wouldn't actually think of, for some reason, I just wouldn't think of teaching. And then actually dating, obviously, is such an unlikely thing to teach, or at least it was back then.
Yeah, it probably...
That was a strange idea to occur to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very experimental person. I've had a lot of different experiments that I've tried when I was, you know, unemployed. I was a street musician for a while. You know, I've done a lot of different goofy things in my day. And my brother actually encouraged me to teach it. And who knows, maybe he knew people were teaching it already out there. But, you know, I was really...
Or maybe he thought no one was, and we thought that would be the shit if you taught it.
Yeah. I mean, my brother just used to kind of sit around and come up with weird ideas, and we'd go try them out. So this was just another wacky idea to me, is all it was. And it was one day a week, and if five guys showed up at $40 a head, I would have $200, which was really big to me at the time. And, you know, I could actually get by and while I was looking for a job. So about 3 months later, I kind of, you know, a lot of the students wanted to learn to have one-night stands. And I had gotten a few by that point, but I wasn't truly efficient at it yet to the point where I could kind of do it anytime I wanted. So I actually stopped teaching for 3 months and just worked on, you know, methodologies for how to get one night stands, because I don't think I was shortchanging the students, but I just wanted to have a real true method of how to do that. I just felt a lot of people were interested in it. And by that point, there were starting to be some people who came into the class who were from the seduction community.
Right.
So I went back to teaching, and in the 3 months I had taken off, the word of mouth had really spread. So I had a larger class than I expected when I came back, and it was getting really popular. A lot of people were getting laid. A lot of people were getting girlfriends. So when I came back, you know, I guess word had spread to the seduction community, and these guys from the seduction community started to come in and ask me questions. You know, I remember the first time it happened, it really threw me off. I was, I was teaching my normal thing, and this guy raised his hand and he said, "Hey Brad, I'm having a little trouble with A3. And I was like, you're having trouble with your car? Is that like a new Mercedes?
Right.
You know? So I didn't know what he meant, you know, and I had to tell him. I was like, I don't know, let me go home and look it up, and I'll see what I can find, you know. So I talked to him after class, and him and his friend, they were IT guys, and they just had all this lingo, and they were like, you need to go and check out fastseduction.com and MASF, and, you know, I went home, I took a quick look at it, and I was like, nah, I don't think I'm going to bother with this. It really looks complicated, you know. These guys are students. How am I? They shouldn't be telling me what to read, you know. It's a little ridiculous. So I went back to the class, kept doing my thing, but just more and more people were kind of like demanding that I explain seduction community material to them, which I wasn't familiar with. And it actually reached a point, you know, probably in like early 2006, where more than half of my class was Seduction Community guys. And they had all read the game. And they said, Brad, you have to read the game. You have to read it. And I was a little thick. I was like, what is this book? What are you talking about? I'm really not into reading books. Like, why don't we just go like meet some girls and you can learn that way? And they were like, nope, you have to read the game. You have to read. So at this point, these guys were just, you know, I was like, okay, I'll read the game, guys. Like, calm down.
Right.
You're minions, Neil.
Yes. And so, but before that, you are now, just to back up a little bit, before the game, you're already posting online, if I remember correctly.
Right, I was posting online.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was they were kind of both at the same time, both of these things were going on. So
maybe they were. Maybe it was later than I thought, which is probably why we didn't interact. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I started posting before I read the game because one of the students had given me, I think it was some of David D'Angelo's interview CDs.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I was a very casual poster at first. I mean, I was just posting like, hey, I went out and I got laid. This is what I did. I was actually trying to learn the terminology and the acronyms at that point because the students wanted it and I had to teach them. They had such a serious interest. And this was a different breed of student, in my opinion. You know, the normal guys I had coming in that were not community guys were, you know, they wanted to learn, but I mean, the community guys, it was almost like a religion. They were just so intense. So I wanted to be able to deliver to those guys. You know, I wanted to be able to give them what they want. So I went on and I learned it all and I tried to like really rephrase what I was teaching and include the things that the seduction community talked about as much as I could.
Right.
So, I mean, at the time I was really in awe of the seduction community. I remember thinking to myself, you know, all right, I'm going to post my little field report, but I know all these guys are better than me. So, you know, I just hope they don't make fun of me too much, you know?
Right. And now, I mean, what, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, they just knew so much more than me, I felt like. Even some of my students who were from the community, I felt like they knew like 10 times more than me. They had read The Mystery Method and they had read The Game. And, you know, I in the beginning, I was a little intimidated by that. I remember when I first started to run infield stuff, which was later. I wasn't running infield stuff in the beginning. I remember saying, wow, I have to get like every girl's number and I have to like make out with lots of girls or else these guys are going to just like say I'm not the real deal. And I just was putting a lot of pressure on myself in the beginning, you know?
Right. And I was going to add, I'm very curious because the other thing I saw when you came on, and you can tell if this is right or not, is I felt like, that it was funny because I didn't know you had a business at that time, but I definitely felt that there was also like some degree, you know, there's probably some degree of seeing this as an op, and you can say if it's true or not, it doesn't matter either way. I think it's very valid if it is, and would be surprised if it wasn't, but there was like some degree of also like finding, you know, it was also like a new source for sort of marketing what you were doing, even though you weren't really marketing there, you were just posting great field reports, as I recall, but I felt like there was some like, you know, subtext of sort of like finding, you know, of finding students, clients kinds of things.
You know, in the beginning I wasn't really aware that people would come for just from reading field reports.
Right.
You know, I knew that the seduction community was a source of business because mm-hmm. they were already there. They had found me.
Right.
But I didn't know that it would be ASF where it actually came from. In New York, there was actually some lairs that were inviting me in and inviting me to post. So I thought I was going to get business from these lairs. So I thought that was really cool. But ASF was more of just like, I didn't think I'd get business because I thought everybody was better than me on there.
Right. I think the difference is, and this is maybe why I thought that, but, you know, I think the difference is most people came in and you saw them grow. You know, you saw myself.
Right.
So you saw, even though Mystery already came in, you know, strong, you saw him grow and learn and struggle and ask questions. You saw Tyler Durden to
right.
Papa to, you know, you name it. You know, you saw almost all these people come in at a certain point and then get to another point. But you kind of came in with the field reports. As far as I recall, like, you didn't ask a lot
yeah.
of, like, kind of help questions. It was just, this is my life and this is what I'm doing. So it almost, you know, so that's probably where I got that impression because you came in a different way than.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had been at it a year and a half at that point already. You know,
right.
and I had been teaching for, I don't know, 6 or 8 months already at that point. So it was a different thing to me. I mean, I eventually figured it out that, like, oh, cool, people will actually pay attention and give me business, and maybe I'm as good as the rest of the people on here, you know, and I started to realize that. But there was also something going on in the beginning where some people just didn't believe me. They thought I was making it up.
Right.
Which I don't know if you could tell, because you probably weren't reading every field report I put, but some people were just like, nah, this guy's making this stuff up. It's ridiculous. This doesn't happen, you know. So I think
they just came out of the blue.
Yeah, exactly. Which, you know,
and it was a time when businesses were starting, so people were probably like, you know, paranoid of people, you know, trying to start business and get followings and things like that. So I think
I guess so. I mean, I did have my URL even in those very early posts. I had a website already. I had the business going, but I sort of looked at it as, you know, if the seduction community wants to come study from me, great. But if they don't, then that's fine, because I had a business that was thriving before I even knew what the seduction community was. So if they want to come, fine, because I'll teach anyone who wants to learn. But if they don't want to come, I can make it without them. I was just fine before them. I'll be just fine after them, you know.
Right. Cool. So let's get on to tactics, techniques, ideas, things you figured out. I have in front of me an awesome list of things from that email that I've never heard of before, so I'm kind of excited as well.
Oh, cool.
So let's start. You know, I noticed that every call in the questions, there are a lot of advanced and really good questions, but every time, no matter what, there are always some guys who have the problems opening, and it never goes away for anyone.
Yeah.
And we all feel that. So let's talk about.
Yeah,
you know,
that's one of the great things about the community. We can help those, you know, early guys, and that's one of the things that was so amazing to me in the beginning, you know, people helping each other. It's incredible.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, half the battle is the opener, because, you know, any guy, you know, at any age, you know, at some point is scared to talk to a woman, no matter how famous or successful or good looking that person may be usually.
Absolutely true, Neil.
So tell me about your, you know, your style of opening, your thoughts on opening.
Yeah, sure. What I kind of do is, the way I learned to open is, in the beginning, for the first few months, I only had one opener, and it wasn't even a very good opener. I would go up to girls and I would say, hey, I'm not from here. Do you know any place where I can get cotton candy around here this time of night? And, and the girls, it was just kind of a wacky thing to say that would catch their attention. And what I did was, since I had delivered it so many times, I just developed really good follow-up material for it, which I call contingencies. So some of the girls would say, you know, if they would take me really seriously, they'd be like, yeah, you can go to Walmart. It's like off of I-5 and they have cotton candy. Then I would kind of say, you know, I'm kidding, right? You know, and
that was kind of,
yeah. So that was how I kind of started, but it wasn't a very good opener. So I wanted to create something. You know, like you said, the opener is really important. So I wanted to come up with something that would do everything for me right in the opener. And I had goals for my opener. I wanted the girl laughing. I wanted to be touching the girl. And I wanted to figure out if the girl had a good sense of humor or not, and if she was a sexual kind of girl. And if she wasn't, I wanted her to show her true colors right away so that I can move on as quickly as possible. Because the way I approach pickup, it's not about being able to get every single girl. What it is about is it's about finding the girls who are the most compatible with you as quickly as possible, and not wasting your time in those like 20-minute go-nowhere sets.
I think that's a great philosophy. I mean, I remember when I got really good at this, I always felt like I had to do a warm-up set. You know, Mr. Dexter noticed, like, we do a warm-up set, then we get, like, stuck on our warm-up set and end up taking our warm-up set home. And we're like, that was supposed to be our fucking warm-up set, like, with the don't stop us, you know what I mean? So I think that's a great point. A lot of people don't talk about that. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I came to that conclusion is because, like, I think a lot of people, when they start learning, they say, I want to be able to get any girl I want, or I want to be able to pick up every single girl, you know, and when you start getting good, I mean, it's almost like you can do that. I mean, I reached a point where I would be taking so many phone numbers. For example, I have like 25 phone numbers on my desk by Monday morning, you know?
Yeah.
And I would stare at the pile and I would be like, you know what? I don't even want to deal with this. It's like job interviews. It's
no, it was a weird thing because I know what you're saying. For at first, I would like collect every phone number and I methodically put it in my phone book and, you know, write some details down about them and you know, mm-hmm. and put them in a category and all that. And then by the end, it was like I'd come home and I'd pocket my phone number. And some were like beautiful girls, some were girls I connected with.
Right.
And I would just be like, I just put them on this little shelf I have. And they just sit there, and then I wouldn't use them, and I forget who they were, and it was like, oh, I was like, oh, that's what hot girls do.
Yeah, you know? Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and then when I got good at one-night stands, there would be, like, two and three girls that wanted to go home with me in one night, and I would, you know, it was just a hard decision. I mean, it probably sounds like a really cool problem to have, but it's actually a little awkward. So, you know, I remember looking at a pile of phone numbers one day and saying to myself, if someone would just tell me which one of those girls would be the most fun to hang out with and would be the most compatible with me, I would trade the rest of them away to just know which one that is.
Okay.
And I started to try to just, you know, build my game to just force girls to show whether they're compatible with me or not. Because, you know, what this is essentially about to me is you develop yourself as much as possible into an amazing man. And then you spend time around women who are just naturally compatible about that. So if you become an amazing guy, you're going to be naturally compatible with amazing women. And that's how I kind of looked at it. So I developed a style of opener to just kind of weed out the girls and just have a really good time in the process. So my favorite opener ever that I came up with is called the horse girl opener.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just does a lot of these things at the same time. And it's a blast. It's really fun to do it. So, you know, your guys can totally use this. It's super fun to do, and I'll explain the opener and how it works.
Okay.
All right, so here's how the opener starts. You would say to the girl, you kind of point to her, you know, kind of look at her like, don't I know you're from somewhere? You know, you wouldn't say that. You would just have that look on your face. And you would say, do you like horses? And she'd say, yes, no, maybe. Doesn't really matter. You'd say, all right, check this out. When I was in sixth grade, there was this girl, and she loved horses. She loved them more than anything. And she used to draw horses on her binder, and she would run around the classroom making horse noises, and we used to call her the weird horse girl. And you look just like her. So most of the time, you know, you'll get a laugh out of that. And it does filter some girls out. Girls who don't have a sense of humor won't get the joke. They'll blow you out, which is fine. I prefer to be blown out rather than stand there for 20 minutes with a girl who has no sense of humor.
Right.
So from there, as I was saying, I built contingencies because I've delivered this so many times. So typically they say, oh, I'm not the weird horse girl. You know, where'd you go to school or something like that?
Right.
And I would say, you know, I can't tell if you're definitely her because you might just be, you know, acting shy with me, you know, not wanting to admit it. Just in case you're her, I just wanted to tell you that I'm sorry, like for all the times I made fun of you. Because back in school, I was the bully and I was the cool kid and I used to make fun of a weird horse girl. And now, like I'm trying to be nicer to people and not make fun of people anymore. So I promised myself that if I ever saw you, I would totally say, I'm sorry. Can you ever forgive me? So at that point, the girl would be usually role-playing. She'd be like,
now,
yeah.
Are you kind of tongue-in-cheek while doing this?
Oh, yeah, totally. They know it's
okay.
A joke. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they know it's a joke. I mean, it's over-dramatic. It's like, oh, my God, I can't believe I made fun of you so much, you know?
Right.
So the girls will role-play along with it, and they'll play the part of the nerdy girl. You know, and they're like, well, I guess I can forgive you, and we'll, like, hug and, you know, have this big reunion, and it's all just a role-playing thing at that point. So the friends will watch this all go down, and I'll kind of address a lot of parts of the story to the friends as I'm doing it, if there's a lot of her friends there. And so it kind of keeps them interested and keeps them from just dragging the girl off. I mean, it's a pretty outlandish story.
Right.
So they usually stay pretty interested in it. So if I could pick the opener apart a little bit for you, both structurally and just in terms of, you know, emotionally as well. The whole point of the opener is, you know, you want to use the right structure. So it starts with what I call a hook question. Do you like horses? Not a lot of girls will walk away from that because, for some strange reason, a lot of girls really like horses. I don't know why. They just do. It's kind of like you and Mystery have, hey, can I get a female opinion on something? That's an amazing hook question. Most girls can't walk away from it.
Right.
So, okay, do you like horses? Hook question. And then you're going to get into some storytelling. But it's not just any story. This is a story where it's very rich in social information. When I was in school, there was this girl. She loved horses. We used to make fun of her. Okay, in that story, there's a social hierarchy. There's one girl who's nerdy. There's other people who are cool. There's people who make fun of each other. So that kind of a story that's rich in social information is something that keeps women intrigued. So the story builds in drama, and it builds in tension, and this is where a lot of the comedic effect comes from. It comes from the tension of the story. I look at the girls when I tell the story, and I can tell they're thinking, why are you telling me this?
Right.
Which is great, because it just kind of sets them up for the punchline. That's the tension of it. So the punchline would be, and you look just like her. So that kind of relieves all the tension, and, you know, it kind of puts the girl in, like, this frame of mind where she's the nerdy girl. And, I mean, even hot girls have been nerdy at some point in their life. Maybe it hasn't been since the third grade, but almost every girl has had that time when
she feels
like...
If they haven't been nerdy, they felt nerdy, like they were the nerd. They all felt it in school.
Right, even if it wasn't true at all, you know.
Right. There was some point where some other girls ganged up on them, and they felt like the outcast, for sure.
Exactly. So... when you have these girls who are hot and they're in the club and they feel like they're the coolest one in there, just to kind of hear this kind of thing at least makes them a little easier to talk to, because then they don't feel like they're so much cooler than you that, you know, it's going to hurt their cred just to, you know, be standing near you.
Right.
So in terms of value calibration, you know, you're going up to the girl and this kind of thing is bringing her value down a little bit, okay? Not too much, but a little bit. And then when you do the contingency and you're like, hey, I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry, then your value goes up a little bit. And then when you tell her, you know, I want to say I'm sorry, and then you give her a hug, it brings her value up. So in the role-playing world, it's sort of like you've come in with higher value than her, and then you've equalized that value, which makes her feel... like she's one of the cool kids and that she kind of got that from you. Now, keep in mind, this is all subconscious. The girl's not taking it that seriously. She knows it's a joke. But on that subconscious level and in that role-playing game, she feels like she just kind of won you over and got these cool points and this cred from this cool guy. And it's a really fun kind of... I mean, it is a pretty goofy opener, but it's really fun and it does a lot of things at the same time. Because... it deals with issues of social value, it gives you a story to tell, and it does weed out girls who are not going to be fun for you. If a girl gets mad at you over the horse girl line, she's way too uptight, and you want to run out of there as fast as you possibly can. There's a lot of girls out there who you shouldn't be dealing with, because there's girls out there who are on psychiatric medication, there's girls who have intimacy issues, there's all these things. So all of that kind of stuff, I want to get away from those girls as quickly as I can and move on to some girls that are going to be really fun for me. Because in the big picture, when I go out, I think it's all about me having fun, first and foremost. Whether I pick up a girl or I don't, or whether the girls like me or they hate me, as long as I'm having fun, then everything is okay. And that's how I've always looked at it.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense, and I think it's a good point. And do you have, like, a little tagline at the end for, like, the end of the routine after you end the role play? Because obviously, I think
really
one of the dangers
hug.
Is this. Right, so it'll be a hug, and that'll be the end, and you'll cut.
Yeah, or I'll say, you know, I made that whole thing up, or something like that, you know.
Right, yeah, do you really say them? Do that? I guess that's fun. I might say something like, yeah, fuck it, I never liked horses anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but it's cool. It's like you do different things with it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think it's important, you know, with a routine like that to, like you said, to have it in, because the mistake some guys make is they might milk it for too long and it becomes from being cute and charming and fun role playing to being like, doesn't this guy have anything else to say or talk about?
Oh, so, well, yeah, you have to go into other
things. Yeah, of course. I know, I'm not saying that about you. I'm saying that more for people listening. Because
right.
I do think one of the dangers that guys might sometimes have is milking the opener because they don't know where they're going next and what they're doing. And then they're just sort of like, we'll linger on it too long. But great. I think it's a great opener. I think also there's, you know, a bigger structure here, which is, and it's funny, I had an opener called the Stephanie Ross opener.
Oh, yeah. How's that one go?
It goes, I'll do with my wing, and whatever, feel with my wing, I'll say, oh my, I'll stop a girl and be like, oh my God, who does she look like? And my wing will look at her and be like, yeah, oh my God, Stephanie Ross. Like, yeah, I'm like, you look just like Stephanie Ross. And, you know, and then we'll do the whole thing. You shared on her. What's your name? Okay, Jennifer. All right. Promise. Okay, good. Because she's actually, and I haven't done this in a while, she's actually the girl, like this, the girl I kind of went to junior prom with, the first time I actually felt love for a girl. I wasn't in love with her, but and I tell her like a sweet story, which is true, about like sitting outside with this girl and, you know, I wasn't that popular in school. Like, and I don't mind saying that. I don't care because I'm, you know, and it was like a big day for me. And remember we stood outside and she was sitting there like, telling me about she was sitting there talking about like how her mother had passed away and it was just her and her father together, and she was kind of like between my legs, like sitting in front of me kind of like this, and she, I remember like tears like started coming to my eyes. I remember like, well, that was the first time I felt like the feeling of love for like another person who wasn't like my family. And so it's just,
wow, and that's an opener. It's very, very warm.
Yeah, hey, I'm a warm kind of guy.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, but so anyway, so the opener will be something along those lines with Stephanie Ross opener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but cool. I think guys can kind of take their own, you know, take something in school, take a girl they picked out in school, and you know, use the weird horse opener, use anything along those lines.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of cool ones. Like one of my natural friends who I learned from had a similar opener. Well, I mean, it was definitely not as warm as the Stephanie Roth opener, but we call it the Heather Henderson opener. And it was a very rapid-fire opener. He would kind of just run by and do a drive-by style. He would grab the girl and say, oh, my God, do you guys know this girl? This is Heather Henderson. We went to the junior prom together. We got really drunk. We threw up on each other. She took really good care of me. We went to the beach. She cleaned puke off me. Then we ended up going out. And we were going out for like 2 months, and I totally fucked her best friend. And Heather Henderson stayed friends with me, even though, so she's like the coolest girl ever. Thank you, Heather Henderson, for still being friends with me. And then we kind of walk off from there.
Right. That's cute. That's definitely not that warm. It's not that warm, but it's very cute. I really think it's about showing contrasting sides of yourself, so that if you look like an asshole and you have an opener that shows you're an asshole, then you're just an asshole. If you look like a nice guy and you have kind of an asshole, high social value opener, that's great. You know, if you look like, you know, like big, giant guys who come across mm-hmm. like teddy bears, they're lovable. Little tiny, meek guys who come across like teddy bears are like wimps. So, you know, it's about showing contrasting sides of yourself. I can also get away with, like, talking about, you know, disgusting sexual things within 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because maybe because they don't, you know, after using an opener like that, because, you know, there's something slightly safer and under the radar about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
you know, I think what's important is guys always showing contrasting sides of themselves.
Definitely agree. I actually had to change a lot of parts of the horse girl when I got good at pickup, mm-hmm. just for that reason. Because when I got good, you know, my body language got good. I had cool clothes. I looked like a player or something. So I had to do horse girl like, hey, do you like horses? Okay, this is really embarrassing, and I can't believe I'm telling you this. But in sixth grade, there was this girl, and she loved horses. And oh my God, is this a boring story? I'm so boring. But anyway,
right.
She drew horses on a binder, and I would have to use all those kinds of things to calibrate it down. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Because you know, most of the game exists to raise your social value up to that of a beautiful woman in a club. Because almost no matter who you are, it's always going to be lower. But once your social value starts raising, a lot of
you have to bring it down.
You can throw away, exactly. Like calling, if you're the guy with the highest social value and you're calling a girl weird horse girl, she might just think you're an asshole. So you kind of have to you know, calibrate. You know, if you're, you know, the guy, just, you know, a regular guy in the club, it's okay. So that's the thing about these routines and things, is you're calibrating for what your social value is in the room. So let's go into a couple other things. What is the shocker, man?
The shocker is that, the horse girl opener. That's,
oh, that is the shocker.
That is it. Because I have like five different openers that all have that same structure, and we call it the shocker.
Right. And the shock is the general kind of twist of, and you look just like her kind of thing?
Exactly.
Great. And like, let's see, we should do, we'll open up for questions in about 20 minutes, I suppose. Do you want to talk about the 10-minute seduction technique? Or?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you guys want to know about, I'm willing to talk about.
You know everyone wants to hear that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to tell you, dude, but you've got to be careful. The rivals are going to come out with a 9-minute seduction routine. And
I know, right?
I just thought something about Mary again, so.
Oh, man. So when I had taken that break from teaching and I was working on my same-day lay game, I learned from this guy, and all my friends used to call him the Pheromone Kid. And we call him the Pheromone Kid because nobody knew what he was doing, but he would walk up to girls, he would smile, and he would chat for 5 minutes, and then they'd be walking away, and they would go into the bathroom and get naked. And he was having sex in public bathrooms, like, all the time. I mean, he was a real pervy guy, so he was definitely into that, you know, even more than regular sex. But nobody knew what he was doing, so we used to all try to rub our head in his armpit and get the pheromones on us and go give it a try, you know. But I actually took, you know, a month or two to just kind of dissect what he was doing, and I learned it, and it's really a pretty bizarre technique. And I don't recommend it.
Do you tell girls the Pheromone Kid story minus this part?
No, actually, I never have.
Okay, interesting, because I think it's a cute, it almost sounded like a cute routine at the beginning about the Pheromone Kid and trying to get you. Anyway, it sounded like a cute routine.
Yeah, it probably could work. So I kind of like watched him do it, and I would ask him about it, and, you know, very gently, because you have to handle these naturals a little gently. And this is what I found out. This is what he's actually doing. And I stress that this is not for everyone. And make sure you already are pretty good before you try this, because it's not for newbies. But here's how it works. He would go up to the girl and he would say, hey, how you doing? You know, my name's Brad. I just wanted to come over and say hi. And, you know, before he even did this, he would have warmed the approach with eye contact. And there's a whole method to that as well, but I'm just going to stick to the more scripted part of it. So he would, you know, say, yeah, I've been kind of hanging around the bar tonight, and I got a long drive at the end of the night, and, you know, I just wanted to kind of meet a couple people before I headed out. And the girl would, you know, chit-chat or whatever. So once he was, you know, he would do certain things with his eyes to kind of let the girl know that he was sexually interested. He would look them up and down and things like that and try to develop a sexual vibe, you know, in a nonverbal way. And once he felt like he had that, which was usually very quickly, he would say, hey, I don't mean to be rude or anything, but you wouldn't happen to know where there's an adult video store around here that's open this time of night? And the girl would say yes or no. And if the girl looked at him like he was a perv, then this kind of question was out of line. He would just leave and start over. He'd be like, thanks anyway, I got to run, but goodbye, you know, nice meeting you. But a lot of times the girls would get interested. And the whole theory behind this is essentially that, you know, every girl has certain dirty fantasies about meeting a stranger and doing something that she's not allowed to do. Even the nicest girls who look like librarians, you know, probably have some sexual fantasy about getting fucked by a stranger behind a dumpster, for example, you know?
Right.
So the Pheromone Kid's a real big believer in this, and he tries to become every girl's dirty fantasy is essentially what he does.
It's funny. I mean, that's similar to what my natural friend, Dustin did.
Oh, really?
In the sense that when I finally had him break down a little bit about it, he was like more of a, he said he was more of a blank canvas they can project their fantasy onto. So So it's
yeah.
similarity is interesting. So yeah, so go ahead.
It's a lot about just believing that women have this fantasy. I mean, that's the first step to learning this kind of a technique.
Right.
So the next part is if the girl says she knows where it is, he would say, cool, thank you so much, because, you know, like I said, I got a long drive at the end of the night, and I just needed to, like, kind of blow off some steam. Like, I'm feeling a lot of built-up tension, and I think I might have to go, you know, go down there and take care of myself.
Right.
So now he's kind of implying that he's about to go masturbate, you know, in a jerk-off booth, you know, in some, you know, shady part of town.
Right.
So if the girl is that kind of dirty fantasy girl, this is going to bring that part of her out. And again, if she looks at him like this is out of line, he's gone immediately. But, you know, more often than not, they find it interesting because he's not, he's so respectful when he's doing it. And he kind of seems like a totally nice guy. He doesn't seem judgmental, like sexually judgmental at all.
Right.
So then he's going to kind of go for the full Monty. He'll say to the girl, you know, you are an awesome chick, and I really got to get out of here soon, but I'm actually going to run into the bathroom right now, and I'm probably just going to take care of myself right now. If you want, you could totally come along and just watch and just kind of hang out with me while I do it. It might be fun. You don't have to do anything, you know, you don't want to do, but it'll only take 3 minutes, and then we'll be out of there, and nobody will even know. So surprisingly, a lot of the girls will be like, okay, and they will just go into the bathroom with him under the, with the idea of just watching him masturbate.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I really can see that working, because I can see a girl be like, that's kind of cool, that's sex, that makes the night fun, and hey, I'm not involved, so it's safe.
Right, I don't have to do anything, you know, and it's all going to be over in 3 minutes. A really crucial part of this is that, this whole thing is going down in 5 to 10 minutes, and her friends are not even going to realize that she's gone. What he does is he warms the approach with eye contact, and he waits for the girl to break off from her group.
Great.
So Pheromone Kid, you know, he taught me that if a girl breaks off from her group, she's either going to the bar to get a drink or she's going to the bathroom.
Right.
And what you want to do is you want to position yourself so that when she gets there, she almost feels like she's approaching you and she's already had eye contact with you. So it's not about, you know, dealing with her friends at all. You never see them. They never see you. Words are never spoken between you and the friend.
Right.
So, you know, if the girl comes into the bathroom with him, then obviously it's already a very sexual situation. And a lot of girls will be very turned on by watching a guy masturbate. I mean, you know, if your students, you know, some of them might be new to this and they might think that this is outlandish and girls don't get off on watching that. But, you know, I'd say the majority of girls do, especially in this situation where she meets the guy and 5 minutes later this is going on. It's very exhilarating. It's the kind of thing that, you know, women write letters to Cosmo about stuff like this. So once he's in there, then he can, you know, obviously do some things to get the girl a little more involved. And the Pheromone Kid taught me, you know, it's very important to be respectful during this time. And you always ask, you never push too much. And you would say stuff like that's hinting to increase participation. Like first you want to make the girl feel sexy. So you'd say to the girl, wow, you look so amazing. This is really like making it so much more exciting just having you here. You know, so that makes her feel so sexy. And for a girl to feel sexy, then she starts feeling horny.
Right.
And then they would hint like, oh my God, your tits look great. You know, and this is just a compliment, but it's hinting that she should take her tits out, you know.
Right.
So a lot of times they follow the lead on that. And then there's like some of the stuff is a little more direct. Like he'll say, hey, you know, I'm having a great time. This is great. I'm kind of like a wet guy. I don't know if you have like maybe some spit. So he'll try to get the girl to either like, you know, rub on some spit or like spit in his hand. Is this a little too dirty for your call, Neil? Is this cool?
Yeah, it's fine. Go on. It's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
To me, like dirty's okay. Anything that's sort of like, you know, disrespecting women or something is not okay. So that's fine with me.
Okay, yeah. And like I said, it is very respectful. You know, Pheromone could always...
No, no, I mean, you know, she's always having a choice. But don't worry about it. Go ahead, you're fine. I'll speak up if not.
Okay,
so
cool,
anyway,
cool.
Because I'm kind of a wet guy.
If you got some spit, maybe that would, like, be really cool to help me out. You know, sometimes the girl will spit in his hand. Sometimes she'll just take that as an invitation to start giving head, you know. And,
right.
And different women have different levels of participation with this.
Right.
Some just want to watch. Some want to go all the way.
Right.
But either way, it's like a win-win situation.
Right.
So, you know, this is a... This kind of thing is, you know, I watched him approach girls in this manner for a few weeks, and I asked him a lot of questions about it, and then I actually went and tried it, and I was so surprised because it worked for me on the first try.
Amazing.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it, you know. I played it real nonchalant. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go take care of myself in the bathroom. You want to come watch? And the girl was like, yeah, sure. And I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, cool, yeah, no big deal, come on in, you know.
Yeah. No, it's funny, I talk about Dave Navarro a lot just because we talk a lot about, you know, girls and, you know, in the last, like, you know, couple of years since his TV show was on, he's very quick, too. It's like he'll quickly screen a girl and within a few minutes he's going to invite her into the bathroom. If she comes in, great. If not, he moves on. So it's funny how many similarities this has between other sort of naturals. Now, the question I have is, I'm walking this in my mind, and the one place where it's okay, what do you do? Okay, let's just say your first time, you got this girl, you're going back to the bathroom, you go in the stall, you lock it, and what do you fucking pull out your pants and start whacking it? What the hell did you do?
Yeah, pretty much. You kind of just, like, look the girl in the eye. Like, at that point, mm-hmm. The girl's like, is this really going to happen? And
right.
You just, like, whip it out and start whacking it, you know? You just got to go for it. You got to jump right in.
are you standing? Are you sitting down? Like,
yeah, you just stand. You just, like, usually what happens is the girl will kind of stand, like, in the corner
right.
Of the stall. So she's, like, furthest from the toilet. And you'll be standing, like, you know, like the toilet might be like 6 inches from you. And she'll like kind of stand there in the corner. Girls almost have like, some of them put on like this almost like they have this cornered animal look in their eye, you know?
Right.
And they'll kind of stand there and you just start looking them up and down and whacking it. And like a lot of times the girls jump in and really want to do a lot more with it.
I think if you're, right. If you're not into it, then you're just not in the bathroom. If you're into it and it's a sexual fantasy, you're there, and they have a guy who you just met kind of like doing that with you. I can see that. Like, you've screened them before they've come to the bathroom a lot.
Right. And like
so
I said,
girl
any...
girl freaked
any,
out by it has already, yeah, moved on.
Exactly. And there's so many spots where the girl can say no and you would just leave quickly. It's not the kind of method that, you know, involves persistence. There's no persistence in this. If you see any doubts when you ask about the video store... you're gone.
Right.
You know, and it really doesn't take long to do it. So, you know, the cool thing about this technique is like, the Pheromone Kid, I did an interview with him. I interviewed a lot of my mentors, the naturals. And I tried to put these out to the community because, you know, I think it's just really important to get good information out when you have it. You know, if you have access to these guys, you gotta spread the wealth. You know, my experience with it was that after the first two or three times, I was kind of like, all right, this is cool. I don't know. I'm a little weird with bathroom sex at this point. I'm like, it's cool once in a while, but it's not something I would want to do every day. I'm like, am I jerking off in a bathroom stall again? Like, this is, what is my life? You know, what is my life becoming, you know?
exactly.
What is my life turning into? But what I found is in the big picture, I kind of use it as a as just a facet to my game. I mean, Pheromone Kid, sometimes that's his whole game. But I'll be like an hour or two in with a girl and it's starting to get very sexual, and then I'll go to this.
Right. It's interesting. I won't see what that's like. There's a pattern here, which is, you know, I need to relieve myself. You know, I can't believe I'm fucking confessing this to you, but I'm a guy and this is how it works. And then why
right.
don't we share this experience together? There's like a pattern. You can do that at any time, or you just see a girl's interested, or it's on, or whatever it is. Yeah, I can see it happening at various points.
Yeah, it becomes almost like a mid-game or an end-game piece if you want to multi-purpose it, you know?
Right.
The other thing is it gives you, like, a different vibe. Like, you know when you just look a girl in the eye and you think to yourself, you know what? I met a girl like you a month ago, and we were in the bathroom and, you know, having oral sex within 10 minutes. So, like, that's a different vibe that you put out with every girl who you look in the eye. You know, you just seem like so much more of a sexual kind of guy. And it generalizes to the rest of your game. So, you know, a couple weeks ago.
And the other thing is, like, I'm just thinking that literally, you know, I remember early on, there were some things I blew early on because the girls were, like, too sexual right away. And I'm like, fuck, I have a whole 9-step routine to get through. I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know what to do now.
Right.
Like, when girls were very sexual right away, and in fact, they're almost too sexual for even the evolution phase shift, which is a lot of talking. They were just, like, out there up for a sexual adventure and to get laid. So having that sort of, you know, routine early on actually would have, like, just cut to the chase, so it wasn't like I talked to them and they went and found some other guy or something like that. Because I remember early on, when my first time started in New York, I met this girl who would be, like, I know the types of girls that are the candidates for that. They've got
a little more testosterone
than the other girls. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be able to, like, switch into a different kind of game, you know, when it requires it, so.
Yeah, and that's why I think, like, the most advanced level is calibration, figuring this shit out.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
Anyway, go ahead. But you were saying that after a while you were like, oh, shit, am I going to have to masturbate in the bathroom again? Go ahead with what you were saying.
Yeah, I mean, but it just generalized to my game to the point where now, like, if there's a girl who's out and she's looking for, like, some quick sex, and she's looking at every guy in the place, they can tell that I'm the guy that you want for that, you know?
Right.
Like, I was in Austin teaching a workshop 2 weeks ago, and there was a girl at the place who, you know, she noticed me because I was talking to a lot of girls, and she noticed my clothing because I have really cool clothes, and she was out looking for some quick sex that night, and we started talking, and 5 minutes later, we were walking, looking for a place to go at it, and we end up, you know, full clothes under a stairwell of the bar. I mean, that was 5 minutes in. So, I mean, I don't know any other ways to learn that vibe except for, like, just doing the Pheromone Kids whole routine, just kind of as practice and as an eye-opener of what's possible, you know? Is it for everyone to, like, tell girls, come watch me jerk off in a bathroom stall? No, it's not for everyone, but it does kind of make some permanent, intangible change to your game, and I think that's really what I got out of it more than anything else.
Right, and guys, for guys who listen to this, obviously, like Brad said, it's not for everybody. If you're already kind of not comfortable in the club or not doing well in the club, I wouldn't go ahead and do this. You do have to, like, you know, on some level, convey some sexuality.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So that's where it's at. I mean, the way the Pheromone Kid explains it is a bit more in depth. I mean, he goes into the inner game mindset of it and talks about game in general and body positioning and eye contact. And I have his interview. You know, if anybody wants to get in touch with me to get the Pheromone Kid interview, you know, it's not hard to find me.
Cool. Yeah. And at the end of the call, we'll give all your the exact details so people can find you, too.
Cool.
And let's see. Let's go. Let's do one more little bit or piece. Those two were great. I think it's nice. A lot of guys will come in and talk theory. Some guys will come on the calls and just, like, poo-poo everything else that other people teach. And it's great that you're giving guys, like, concrete stuff they can go out and use.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a question. So how many times have you ended up just jerking off in the bathroom alone and her just watching you?
Let me see. Oh, man, I've definitely done it a fair number of times. I mean, I've messed around with it a little bit and tried to do it with two girls. Like, when I got bored of it, I was like, let's see if I could do it with two girls. And I did it with two girls a few times. And, you know, I've done it quite a few times. Then there's...
With two girls, would there tend to be too much social pressure for them to participate? Or?
Yeah, the two girls usually just watch. Or they'll, like, grab a hold and giggle to each other a little, you know.
Right, they'll do something, but it's for each other. It's not for you.
Yeah, but like, you always end up taking one of those girls home afterwards.
Right.
Like, always. Once they've kind of been through that craziness, they want to go home with you, you know?
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's bad. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know why. There's just, like, so many funny images. You can just see it backfire. Like, a movie scene, like a, I don't know, Ben Stiller movie or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do it like on workshops or anything. Like it requires like a really certain mindset to get into, you know.
Now here's the ultimate question, which I posed in the Style Diaries from that the rules of the game.
Okay.
After you've gone to the bathroom and jerked off, let's just say it was a solo event with these girls watching.
Right.
Do you charge better and are responses better or worse after having relieved yourself? I just watched it, something about Mary again, so it's a burning question.
A burning question. Okay. I mean, if I had a really good time with it, I'm like, cool, I'm heading home.
so no would be that in that case.
Well, game over at that point, you know.
Right.
Or sometimes I try to pull the girls home, and obviously a game better because they're just like wanting to do more and get home. Or I pulled a few threesomes doing it, and it's really mixed results, you know. I would say, like, you know, it's really hard to say. Yeah, sometimes
I was asking more, there's something about, I always talk about this in the reading sometimes and in the book, but there's two philosophies of guys. Some guys believe that, as I do,
right,
that by withholding and not releasing, you know, that you're going to kind of project more charisma when you go out and have more of a need for something to happen. Other guys believe that by releasing, you'd be relaxed and cool and give off a better vibe and come off as less desperate.
Yeah, I would agree with the second part, so I guess I would respectfully disagree with you on this one.
No. It's just a matter of personal preference, and I think there's something about Mary theory.
Yeah. I remember the last, when I was doing that workshop in Austin and I did the girl under the stairs, I remember coming out into the club and like, you know, I'm in this loud dance club and I had like just blew a load like seconds before and I was all red in the face. And I remember girls just staring at me in awe, you know,
right,
like they didn't know what happened, but they sort of knew what happened.
No. If you just had sex, it's on. If you just had sex, you do great when you go out. Girls can pick up on that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, if that's the theory, then I agree with that. Because I agree with if you just had sex, but I don't agree.
Oh, like if you like whack it like 3 hours before you go out to start, you know, to like some internet porn.
Right. Or in your case, if you whack it in the club, in the bathroom.
To a girl, right. Yeah, I don't think whacking it will hurt your game much, unless you're like wearing yourself out with like a 3 hour marathon. I don't think it'll hurt your game much. I've heard that theory, though. I think it varies between guys who are high drive and guys who are low drive. If you have a low sex drive, I think it'll take a lot of the edge off. But high drive guys won't even feel the difference, you know? So
it's a very individual thing. Right. Because in the game, you know, Mystery has a whole post that I put in there because it's funny where he talks about the Napoleon Hill theory of conservation of sexual energy and, like, waiting a week to do it and all that kind of shit. Anyway, we will move on because it really doesn't help anyone's game, and nobody really knows.
Oh, okay.
Matters, personal preference.
Right.
So let's talk about kind of one more technique, idea, method thing, and then we'll move on to phone calls.
Cool.
Let's see. I have a list of some of your stuff here. I'll just let you choose. Well, you know what? I don't want to say things we might not discuss. So what do you want to talk about? We could talk about threesomes. We could talk about opening. We could talk about playing control, anything, what do you want?
I mean, you know
about?
What? You know what the big important thing is to me these days? I mean, there's so much technique out there, and it's all so good, you know, like, you could go on ASF or get any of, you know, the stuff that you've written. You'll get so many great techniques. I just, the thing that I see students struggling with these days is application and how do they apply it and what's their learning process. And this is something that I've been really into lately because, you know, like I said, just having like a background as a social worker and when I was a basketball coach and things like that, like the way you go about learning really dictates how long it's going to take you to succeed. A lot of guys say to me, Brad, how long is it going to take me to get good at this? 3 months, 6 months, what's it going to be? You know, and what I see a lot, you know, kind of coming into the seduction community as you know, a bit of an outsider, I see a lot of people that are reading a lot of material and not utilizing it. And they're creating like this kind of log jam of information in their head. So the thing that I've been working on recently that I think is the most beneficial to students is just having a very structured learning process and timing the information in a very deliberate way. You know, beginners shouldn't be reading too much advanced stuff. you know, I've had guys come in who don't know how to open, and they read the game, and they want to do your massage of a thousand hands thing and get a threesome, and it's like their first day, you know.
Right.
So I would, you know, these days what I'm trying to tell students as one of my most important lessons is, you know, take in a little bit of material at a time and use it very thoroughly, you know, before you go reading everything under the sun. And really, you know, try to time information so that you're getting the most out of it. And the easiest way to do that is to monitor your field time to study time ratio. I run something called the 30-30 Club, and in the 30-30 Club, I supervise everybody's game and how it's developing, and I give them a very specific system for timing this information. And one of the things I tell people is, you know, you're gonna meet 30 new women every 30 days. That's why it's called the 30-30 Club. And as you do that, I want you to make sure that for every 1 hour you spend studying, you are spending 2 hours in the field doing approaches and using this stuff and going on dates and doing phone game. Because if you don't, the information kind of gets distorted in your head. And it's almost like milk rotting in the fridge. The longer you leave it in there without using it, the more it starts degrading, and it essentially becomes useless. So I deal with a lot of guys in my workshops who have this information overload, and they have they've just taken in too much stuff and not used any of it. So the guys who are listening right now, you know, if I could tell you one thing about your learning process that you need to keep in mind, it's that rule of for every 1 hour you spend studying, please spend 2 hours in the field. Like you're listening to this call right now. Me and Neil are going to be talking about game for 2 hours. You should go in the field for 4 hours and do approaches before you listen to anything else and before you read anything else. Because if you don't, your game can move backwards. It could take you 4 or 5 years to get good at this. You know, the idea of my 30-30 club is, you know, it's 12 months. After 12 months, you should be good at this. If everything's timed right, if you learn things in the right order and don't try the advanced stuff on the first day, you shouldn't have to take 2 and 3 years to get good at this. And that's what I'm kind of trying to bring to the community now, like that disciplined approach to learning. And, you know, like they do in college, and they do everything in a certain order, and it's for a really good reason. And that's the thing I'm really trying to stress to people right now, because I really feel it's important.
Cool, yeah, I think that's a good rule to get people in the field, absolutely. And I guess since you brought it up, and this will be our last thing before we move on to the call, you know, right. what is your sort of threesome? I mean, I remember reading about your threesomes, and I remember in the email Diego put out, you had a different threesome method than the dual induction massage. I have a couple others now I use as well, but.
Yeah, dual induction massage is awesome, man. It's super killer stuff.
Yeah.
I've used it a few times myself.
That's awesome, man. I know. I'm always jealous whenever someone uses it. I'm like, they're just so fun when they work.
Yeah. Oh yeah, especially that one.
Yeah.
The way I learned threesomes is, you know, one of my friends who is really good at getting threesomes kind of tutored me on it. And you know, when I was in New York, learning about this, I had a lot of girls in rotation. I think I had 8 girls in rotation at the time. Which is too many. Nobody should have 8 girls in rotation. It takes your life over. But I didn't know that at the time, so I had 8 girls. So what I would do is I would say, you know what, girl number 5 and girl number 7, I'm really like, I don't care if I lose those chicks, you know, I could take them or leave them. I'm going to just invite one of them over, get her really turned on, and then have one of the other ones come over and kind of walk in the middle of it. And so the idea is to build a high level of compliance in two of your fuck buddies, and then just kind of throw them together and hope it works out. And if you lose them, you lose them. And I haven't lost any yet. So to get more into the specific technique of it, what you need is, you know, a lot of times you'll have that one girl in your rotation who's like legitimately bisexual. You know, she like really likes girls. So that's the great starting point. As long as you have one of those girls to start with, you're doing good. So that girl, you want to tell her, you want to be like, listen, I think I want to have a threesome, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite over another girl, and I need you to come over at 10 p.m. So when you get there at 10, the other girl will be hot and ready and waiting for you, and she'll be gorgeous girl. Don't worry about a thing. So now you have a highly compliant bisexual girl who's going to come over. Now, then you might have like another girl who's like a little less bisexual. Maybe she's curious, but she's never done it. And what I'd do with that girl is I'd say, you know, hey, why don't you come over, have some dinner, like come over around 8:30. And then by like 9:30, I got that girl like into bed and starting to get her heated up. So I'm going to want to kind of, you know, not fully start having sex with that girl yet. Just kind of heat her up, tease her for like a half hour. And then when 10 o'clock rolls around, the doorbell rings, the other bisexual girl kind of comes up. So what you have is one like horny, curious girl and one like really comfortable bisexual girl. And from there, you know, you just kind of, you know, the girl who's already heated up, I would just kind of keep like fingering her and stuff while the two girls kind of talk and introduce themselves to each other. And then,
I see, like it's just completely normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, this is Danielle, this is Janine. And, you know, they'll talk a little bit and, but it gets sexual very quickly from there, obviously. It already is. So my kind of threesome method, when I was learning it, was just to invite two chicks over and be already going at it when the second chick arrives, you know? And I kind of look at that as like my training wheels to learning threesomes, because the threesomes aren't that hard to learn. Like, I remember when I was trying to learn same-day pulls, that was hard. That took me like months to learn. But threesomes only took me about a month to learn how to do it, you know? And now I've had like every different kind, like two girls who are friends, you know, you go out with one girl and pick up a second, you know, all those types of things. But I think if you haven't done a threesome before, you really want to deal with the sure thing, and not make it too difficult for yourself. And that's why it's best to just invite over two girls who are already very compliant with you, so you can learn the ropes. I mean, it is a different mindset. It's a different type of sexual performance that you need to have. You know, you need to have like enough stamina to last with these girls. And the first time, it's definitely not easy, and it's not as comfortable as when you're doing it for your seventh or eighth time, you know? So I think that's just a great way to kind of break yourself in and get some girls in on the process as well.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, since the dual induction is in my books, like, I had to develop other ways to do things, and I did develop another way, which is not unlike yours. And I'm trying to think if I should share it right now, because it's pretty good.
Oh, come on, Neil, man. Give me all my good stuff, man.
I know. If I mention it, I have to say it anyway. It's kind of like it's a given. So I'll just say it really quickly so I don't take up too much time to go to questions. But it's pretty fucking awesome. All I do is, you know, I just find somebody. Again, I choose two girls who I've already been with, two girls who I'm kind of seeing casually, two girls who I at least know, like, maybe bi-curious, at least they've said it, even if they've never acted on it. They don't have to even done it before, at least slightly bi-curious. But it doesn't matter to what degree. You know, even if I just have a feeling that they may be up for it, that's good enough for me. So in other words, there's very little pre-establishment of it, other than I know that they might be interested if it's done right. And that really applies to about 80% of girls, if not more.
Yeah,
So it's simply this. I just choose a night. I make plans with both of them for 8 o'clock. And this hasn't failed yet, but that's also because I've chosen the right people. I make plans for 8 o'clock. As they're driving over, I'll call one. And I'll say, hey, I invited a little plaything over for us tonight. And, you know, I'll get one or two responses. Either, you know, well, I usually get, you know, if she's really into it, she'll be like, is she cute? What's she like? That happens about 10% of the time. Other times, they'll be like, plaything, what do you mean? I'll be like, oh, there's this girl. She's really fun. You'll love her. You know, she's really cool. And she might have an objection. I'll deal with one objection, then I'll change the topic. I'll be like, and, you know, we're going to go to the business. I got this pasta. It's like actually chocolate pasta. We're going to try it out and see if it actually works. It's supposed to be like chocolate flavored pasta. I don't know what kind of sauce you use with that. I got like this raspberry sauce or something. Anyway.
Like change the subject.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, if they don't say no or don't turn around, which has never happened, it's just kind of on. There might be an objection, like, won't this affect us? And I'll be like, well, there are certain rules that you have to know, which is you know, you always have to make the girl number one. It's not, you know, whatever. I'll do something to, like, deal with any objection if it comes up. You know, then I'll call the other girl, and I'll do the exact same thing. I'll be like, you're on your way? Good. I'm bringing over a little plaything for us tonight. Like, a plaything? I'll be like, yeah, it's this girl named, Jessica. You'll love her. She's fun. She's really enjoyable. Just like a little, you know, toy for us to enjoy. You know, for each girl, the other girl is your plaything, a toy for you both to enjoy. It doesn't get in the way of your relationship. It's like you bought a sex toy at a store. So if there's an objection, deal with that, change the subject, you know, bam. So now both girls are over. Generally, if, you know, when you were seeing eight girls, there's some girls who felt closer to you, some girls who felt less close or a little more casual. So, you know, when they come over, I'm going to make sure that whatever girl needs to feel the closeness of the relationship, you know, I'm going to make sure the girls are sitting next to each other. I'm going to sit next to the girl who needs my attention more, who feels like she's going to close, you know, who's less open-minded perhaps. And also, I don't want to be sitting between the two girls, because then it's like, oh, this guy thinks he's a pimp, he thinks he's cool. It has to be about the girl's experience. I'll sit next to that one. At some point, it was in the first 10 minutes, I go to the bathroom and I leave him alone. Don't know why, and I kind of know why, but, you know, it would just be putting a theory on it. But the girls always need some time alone to, for some reason, where they can actually, like, talk and bond. I don't even know what they fucking say. I should leave a recorder out. but for some reason, when you get back, you know, it tends to sort of be on. And I notice, like, the girls will often instigate it. They'll, like, slap my ass, or they'll, like, you know, they'll, like, you know, suggest we get, you know, go swimming or something like that. So, you know, that's pretty much it. Like, they know what's going on. It's pre-done. So once you start making out with one girl, the other one's sort of going to join in. Just
it's
have to make sure
like
the one
this
that
phone call is like 10 or 15 minutes before when they're already on the way.
Exactly. Yeah, it's got to be on the way.
Okay.
So it's kind of like your thing. It's pre-set up, but this time it's pre-set up. You know, it's a surprise to both girls, but it's also pre-set up with both girls.
Right. Oh, that's cool, man. I like it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I could totally see that working.
Yeah. It's pretty fun because they're over. And I mean, it's fun too. And it doesn't go away. Like, you can, there's no rush once they're over. You can go out to a bar and come back. There's no rush because they know it's on. They know what's happening. It's kind of exciting to them. And the longer you wait, the more aggressive they actually are going to start to get about starting it.
That is cool. I'm going to try that one out.
Yeah, try it out. And let me know. It's great. So any of you guys who are seeing multiple fleet people, that's an easy way to do it. You know, it's funny, and before we start, sometimes every now and then, like, a student will tell me something that's kind of interesting, and he said this. I've never done it. I don't even know if I want to do it. He said that, like, he actually has done things where he'll meet a girl online, and he'll do this fantasy thing where he'll have her come to a hotel room, but black out all the windows, all the doors, and never come over. They'll never see each other. They'll have sex, and then they'll leave.
Huh.
I thought it was an interesting thing, yet I've never tried it. I almost feel like there's a danger there that might make you sound like you're insecure about your looks or something like that.
Like a pitch black, it's like you can't see the other person at all?
Right. So they come in, sex happens, they leave. And there's something kind of hot about that.
Yeah.
But I'd be curious. I wish I knew who it was, because I was curious how he'd deal with the, you know, obvious things she's going to think that he's doing it because he's insecure about himself physically.
Right. I think it appeals to the anonymous thing. Some people are just interested in anonymous sex.
Right.
You know?
Right, exactly. And I do know girls who are like that.
Yeah. It makes it easier for them emotionally.
Yeah.
You know?
And they get turned on by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool.
Sounds like David Shade would have something to say about this.
Exactly. So let's take some calls. I think it's been really a fantastic call, man.
Yeah.
StyleLife.com presents Style Life Academy.